Welcome back to the Sports Coaching Podcast with me, Sam Umshaw. This week, I'm joined by Damien McGrath, current head coach of the Germany Rugby Sevens national team. In this episode, we chat team cultures and buy-in. Damien shares his insight on what team culture means to him and the cultures he's experienced in his previous roles, including time as head coach of Spain, Canada and Samoa Rugby Sevens national teams, respectively. Damien then explains the importance of creating buy-in from his coaching experiences. And finally, we discuss implications to creating an effective culture and buy-in for your coaching practice.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
I'm Damien McGrath, and you're listening to the Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Okay, welcome back to the latest episode of the Sports Coaching Podcast with me, Sam Holmshaw. And I am absolutely delighted, all the way over from Germany, I'm delighted to be joined by Damien McGrath, who is currently the Germany Sevens head coach. Damien, how are you? Thanks so much for coming on.
I'm very well, thank you, and thank you for asking me. A real pleasure.
No, it's absolutely delighted to have you with us. I know we've just briefly chat before we hit the record button, but how's everything been in Germany in this crazy time? I know we're coming towards the end of that now.
Well, much easier, I think, than back home in England. We've been training in full since May. There are no restrictions really here in Germany. You wear a mask on the tram, but all the bars, restaurants, shops, everything's open as normal, and people are going about their normal life. And I was hoping that would, you know, transfer itself across to the UK, but it seems to be taking a little bit longer. Yeah. But the beauty of life here is we've had 30 degrees plus weather for the last 2 months at least. So it has been a real pleasure to be.
I can imagine. Super stuff. So I think to start us off, Damien, do you want to give everyone listening, especially those that aren't familiar with your coaching background, a bit about yourself? A bit about your coaching pathway and what's led you to your position today.
Yeah, I mean, one of the downsides of being old is it takes you longer to tell a story, doesn't it? I've had almost 30 years in professional coaching, and you know, the old joke is I've more clubs than Jack Nicklaus. I really have managed to move around the world and try different things in different places. I was a professional rugby league player. As was then, it was part-time, but it was the only way you got paid in rugby. Playing for Batley, I was a teacher by day. I got offered the opportunity way back, it seems like yesterday to me, but in the 1980s, Leeds City Council were ahead of the game in sports development, and they decided to have a sports development unit. And it was an opportunity to go into sports coaching full-time, or into sport full-time. You know, outside of being a professional soccer player, I don't think there was a way of being in professional sport. So I was seconded across to work as the Rugby League Development Officer for Leeds in a sports development unit of about 8 people. And it was a great opportunity to work in schools, in local clubs, and connect with the professional clubs, of which there were 3 in Leeds at the time. I wasn't the best player. That's making me sound even better. But, you know, I was always struggling to be, you know, to match the really good player. But it always fascinated me, what was it that made good players good players? And, you know, I watched the best players we had, and what was it they did and how did they do it? And having a connection through being Rugby League Development Officer with the professional clubs, I got an insight into Leeds, you know, who were the blue chip club of Rugby League, you know, at Headingley. I got a chance to go watch them train. I went into coaching with Batley as their reserve team coach as I finished playing, and we won the reserve championship in that first year, and Leeds offered me a chance to come across and work full-time in their academy, which was just being set up then. And, you know, we had the best young kids about that. I coached the Great Britain Academy team. I worked with the Great Britain under-21s, and then I got promoted to be assistant coach to the first team, and we won the Challenge Cup at Wembley, and we went to the grand finals at Old Trafford, and I got a chance to be assistant coach for the national team in the 2000 World Cup, which was fantastic achievement. And then really out of the blue, they changed coaches at Leeds, and as is always the case, the new head coach coming in from Australia wanted his own people in.
That room staff,
yeah. And I went to the same as assistant head coach to the London Broncos when Sir Richard Branson bought the club. I don't know if you remember, that was back in 2000, and he made a big impact on rugby league, and they got to Wembley as well. But he bought all the top players in from Australia and New Zealand. We had a who's who of, and that was a fantastic opportunity for me to work with top level players. But I seem strange now, being a Northerner, I moving to London and leaving the family was almost like living in another country, and I was struggling being away from home. It didn't pay enough to move everybody down lock, stock and barrel. And another great friend of mine, Joe Lydon, one of the legends of rugby league, he'd been the performance director in rugby league, and he'd moved over to Rugby Union to work under Sir Clive Woodward in what was then their very small performance unit. And Joe got in touch with me and said, would you like to come across and work as defence and skills coach for the England A team, which was, you know, they had a Six Nations for the A group then. He said, and the World Series in Sevens is just starting, and we're going all out for it. I'm going to be head coach. You can assist me and do the skills and defence and things for that as well. And he said, you can live at home and, you know, be based at home. It's not, you know, you're not based down anyway. It's just come down for training. And well, that was the last time I think I saw the north of England, because it was an amazing time, because we travelled the world on the Sevens. You know, Rugby Union just had a much wider scope worldwide. So, you know, I had an amazing time learning the game and just dealing with different people and people with different outlooks. Because back then, Rugby Union had only just gone professional. It was there was the amateur ethos and approach in a professional world, and there was all those things to deal with. I went to Leicester Tigers for a couple of years when Leicester were the kings of the Europe to help my education. I was skills coach for the first team when I was they were all household names at the time in playing in the first team there. I carried on with the Sevens and I coached England under-19s. I had one game as the senior England defence coach when a couple of the guys were away, which didn't go too well. And I just had a really good all-round education working across the whole national group. But again, as always happens, there seems to be a point through my life that Clive left, a new coaching setup came, a new approach, and a lot of the coaches, including me, were moved out. I got an opportunity to go to Spain, to work over in Spain for 2.5 years. Wow. With a guy called Jed Clint, who I met through England, to work with the Spanish national team. And I had 2.5 years there, and then came back to work in rugby league at Huddersfield, went to Wales as head of rugby in North Wales when the WRU were going to do things, make North Wales the next big region, which it has become now. Went back to England with the Sevens, went to Samoa to be head of the Sevens, went to Canada, and then got this fantastic opportunity here in Germany, which is as close to home as I've been for a long, long time.
Wow. That's fantastic.
So, yeah, it's been a long journey, as long as it took to tell you that as well.
I know, really, 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 really interesting insight. Sounds like it's been a very cultured journey, should I say, which fits into our topic today, which we'll get onto just a moment. But for those listening that aren't sure and, you know, haven't seen the whole idea of rugby sevens, can you tell us a bit more about the sport and, I guess, just an introduction of what it's about and what's the difference?
Well, an easy analogy would be like T20 cricket. It's the game compressed into a shorter time frame, with less players on the field. But it's a game it's the fastest growing part of rugby. And, you know, having coached in areas and regions where rugby isn't king, it's the thing that captures the imagination of non-rugby people. To like rugby union or even rugby league to a small degree, to watch the full version of the game, you have to understand the nuances and all the little things that maybe the amateur won't see, but the enthusiast will really appreciate. Sevens is completely different because it's bite size and you can dip in and you can dip out. The action is there all the time. The athletes are amazing. The rugby skills are fantastic. And you can have a great deal of entertainment without a lot of knowledge. And your knowledge, it's easy to understand the game and to grasp the game. And rugby sevens, particularly in Canada, where I was before, 40,000 people at Vancouver Sevens on day one and then again on day two. Most of them never seen rugby, but fell in love with it and came back, and it helped grow the game. And I think Sevens does that around the world. It has a way of bringing you into a sport that you may thought was maybe not for me, and it looks a bit too complicated. And you know, it's a real introduction. And I think in the modern world where people don't want to spend too much time doing anything, I think it fits the mould at the moment.
Fantastic. And you know, you coming from a rugby league background, did you find it, you know, was it, I don't know, a lot different for you going into rugby sevens, or was it quite straightforward?
Sevens is probably closer to rugby league than anything else. I sort of hinted at it when I told you about that, when I changed codes from rugby league to rugby union, where people think they're almost the same thing, but really the only connection what I found was that the ball was the same shape. You know,
that's interesting.
The rules are different. The way you play the game is much different because of that.
Yeah.
And people's approach to the game was completely different. I mean, the games now, if you look in 2020, rugby union, it's full-time professional, lots of money involved, and how the game's played is becoming closer to rugby league. Back then, when I first came into it, there was a huge chasm. And coming from a full-time professional setup as rugby league was into rugby union was a culture shock for me. But what I expected and demanded of the players had to be changed because they couldn't grasp what being a professional was. Or some people thought it was 9 to 5. You come in at 9 and train all day till 5. And They didn't really know how to prepare for rugby and how rugby players should act. And there was the approach was that was really when I first thought a lot about how you should approach training, how you should approach player management, was that time when I changed in from a professional environment to a non-professional environment and a change of sports almost. And
yeah,
I know lots of guys came from rugby league and rubbished everything in rugby because it wasn't as good as we do and they don't do this. Well, no, why would they? Because they're not used to doing things like that.
Yeah,
the rules of coaching, I think, are the same throughout any sport. It's about how you manage people and how you get the best out of people. And that was the first time it really hit home to me.
Definitely. Really interesting insight so far, Damon. I can tell this is going to be such a great discussion today. So, you know, we'll move on to our topic of discussion for the listeners. So today we're going to chat about team cultures and buy-in, which is, you know, buy-in particularly is something that's often thrown around a lot in the coaching world. But, you know, team cultures is something I've you know, recently done quite a bit of research on. And I've always found it, you know, such an interesting topic, really. So, you know, and I think you're almost the perfect guest today, Damien, to almost chat around this with all your experience, especially all over the world. So,
the Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
You know, to start us off, Damien, I guess, you know, what is a team culture, or what's a team culture to you?
Well, I think it's the environment you create. And I don't think, I mean, it's a very trendy thing to talk about now, isn't it? Team culture. Every time you watch Sky Sports News and they're looking at whoever's won the championship in this or that, and they talk about the great culture at the club, but I'm not sure they really understand what it is.
It means, yeah.
It's the environment. It's if you can make it, and not just you, but the people you work with, make somewhere a place that people want to be and want to be part of, then I think you've created a culture. And culture only happens when you value people and you make everybody feel part of it. And I go back to why did I want to coach, and what do I want to be as a coach? And it's never really changed from day one. You know, despite the fact that I'm now at the end of my coaching career, I can remember my favourite teachers at school. I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
What I went to a grammar school, an old boys grammar school, where the teachers wore mortar boards and the capes, and it was very formal back then. But the best teachers weren't necessarily the most educated. You know, they weren't the Oxford Dons. They were the teachers who made me feel part of the lesson, or made me look forward to it, because they had some. They created an environment that promoted learning, but also enjoyment. And the word fun and enjoyment always comes up now as well in coaching. I'm not a great believer in fun, because I think if you can make people enjoy what they do, they have fun anyway.
Yeah.
So I've tried to be those teachers. Joe Henry, I'm talking about, he's my first ever form teacher. I love working with Joe. You know, he could tell great stories. He could set the scene, and he made you want to be interested in what you do. And it's how you can make people feel. And I, as a teacher back in inner city Leeds back in the early 80s, I still get messages from the boys in my first rugby team at Shakespeare Middle School. Even now, they're in the 40s, God's sake. You know, they still call me sir, and sir, do you remember this? And I've just found this picture. Because, and it makes me feel proud more than anything else, that, you know, they still remember and enjoy that, because that's what I wanted to do when I started. That's how I saw things. So that surely is culture in its own way, how you make people feel. And you talked about buying, but to get people to buy in, you have to have something to sell. Mm. And you have to be a salesman as a coach. You have to sell the dream. Mm. Why would you invest time in something if you didn't think you were going to something from it? You know, you invest money in the bank because you want a return. You want interest on your investment. Well, I see sport in the same way, you know. Invest in me and what we're doing, and we will get a return, you know. And you sell that dream to them, you sell the picture. This is where we're going to be. And once they see that and what it could be, then it's easier to show them or ask them to do certain things to get there. So, and with that, then comes good culture, because they know what they need to do to get there, and you can set boundaries then much easier. And, it's getting people to look forward to coming to work. And I always listen for that, because, and I know it's happened in Canada and other places, you know, they've said to me, can't wait to get to train tomorrow to do this, or we want to try this. And that's, then you know you've won, you know, whether you've won a cup or a trophy or your name's on the honours board. You know, for me personally, I see that as a win. It might not be in the papers tomorrow, but I know I've been successful.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Damien. I think you're right. I think it's like you say, it's often thrown around. I think about me being a football coach. It seems to be thrown around in football a lot, especially with the pundits. And again, they talk about a word often thrown around is a winning culture. You know, he's created a winning culture there. But I think, you know, it people tend to forget that it is about. It's a place that people want to, you know, they want to be. They want to turn up to learn, to improve, to develop. And, you know, fascinating there that you've just said, you know, for you personally, it's more about almost developing the person, developing the player, as opposed to winning a trophy. That's almost like your bonus, if you like. And, you know, there's a paper in academia that talks about serial winning coaches. So, you know, all these coaches that have gone and won at the Olympics, you know, in various sports, and they all had that same trait. Forget the final. Yeah, we want to win. Well, it's about developing the people, and I just find that fascinating. You know, I mean,
how would you describe it? I don't often do speak or do conferences, but when I do, it's happened to me three times in the last couple of years, and people have said, "This is Damien McGrath." But he has a reputation for always leaving somewhere better than he found it. And at first, I thought, "Oh, that's a bit." You know, I'm looking for something a bit sexy. You know? But then I sat back and thought, well, you know, actually, I'd be quite proud of that. If that's how people see me, you know, who've met me and know me, then I'd be happy with that. Because, you know, I'm not a big fan of goal setting, even for players. I think every day you should get up to be the best you can be. Mm. And if you do that, you can go anywhere. You know, yeah. People who set these goals, I want to be professional here, I want to play for that team, or I want to win this trophy and win a medal here. If you get up every day thinking, I want to be the best I can be, well, those things will come, the process will make sure the outcome is much more positive than you could ever hope for. And the other one that someone said to me, I did a podcast right at the beginning, and they said, you could say that he's fluent in success, which I quite liked, I must admit, because I'd worked in different different countries under different languages, and I've always managed to do the same thing. So it's only lockdowns made me think about these things far more than I've just always gone to places and just done as I've always done without really thinking through, having a real set agenda to do this here and that there. But I just think if you have that, I'm going to be the best I can be every day. And there's no such thing as a great coach, because I think there's far too much to learn and far too much you don't know.
Yeah.
And even now at 60, I feel there's so much I don't know.
Yeah.
I think in coaching, experience is a huge thing, because you have to be able to fall back on the good and bad.
Yeah.
Call it curiosity, call it whatever you want, and people throw that about. But there's always someone who does something that makes you sit up and think. And the word if I had to write a book, I'd call it connection, because connect is the word that I always think. You connect with the people, you connect with your sport, you connect with academia and research that might help you to improve your sport. You're always connecting. You might see something that another coach does or another team that connects how you play. And it's about getting those connections and always searching for them, because there's always something there. You know, I follow Twitter. I did it when I started living around the world to keep in touch with home. And then every so often you'll come across a great article, be it soccer, be it, you tell how long I've been away, I'm calling it soccer. be it football, cricket. You know, I talk to my brother a lot and, you know, about what they do in, and there's such a connection in so many things.
Yeah.
And you think, oh yeah, I like that. And but then you have to connect what you've learned with your sport and how does it fit in? How does it adapt? The guys we've got here in this German coaching course this week, it's not that they're not good coaches. It's just they don't know what they don't know. They're not exposed to things as we might have the luck to be, being in a country where things are close by. And they can't connect that doing the simple things very well helps your team improve. They see the senior guys training here when we train in the evenings or the mornings, and they think that some of the practices we do could be good for the kids, and they're not, because they look good, but they're not really ready. It's that connecting what's going to make your players better. You know, it's whether it's back at Shakespeare Middle School in the middle of Leeds in 1981, or, you know, in Samoa in 2016, you've got to make sure everything fits to what is appropriate at the time.
Yeah.
Making that connection.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, this is so fascinating, and also so refreshing for me to hear. I think that's such a great point, connect, and being connected to, I guess, internal and external resources that, are going to help you not so much achieve what you want to achieve, but go about your role the best way possible. But no, I mean, really, really intriguing. And that's, I guess that's coming from your culture that you've wanted to create and what you've probably taken with you throughout your journey. I think the other, what's often associated with culture is what you often hear is that there's already a culture in place, for certain countries or certain teams. So Barcelona, for example, have a culture. Ajax have a culture, and, from football terms. So, I guess in your experience and, as you've travelled the world and worked in different countries, have you experienced cultures that are already there? And are they different? Are they similar? Is, anything
like that? There's the culture. If you go to places where people have been involved for a while, I'll start at the most recent here in Germany. The German team in sevens terms, they're not on the World Series, but they've always been the nearly men. They've almost got themselves on the World Series several times in the last few years, and most of the players are coming up towards the age of 30 now.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been here a long time, and some white-haired English guy comes in to tell them how they can take the next step. You know, how do you overcome that culture of A, resignation that we're not going to make it, I don't think, you know, we've missed our chance now, or, you know, we know how to play because we've been playing together for a while. How do you overcome those feelings and those thoughts? And again, and in another language too, you know, I sometimes speak my English too quick. As much as some of them can speak English, you have to, the thing about, I found this going to Spain, which was my first time, what you say has to be thought through very carefully, and it makes you think about the message you put across. When we're talking together here, we can rifle things backwards and forwards. You probably pick up the understanding about what I'm trying to say, even if it's not actually in the words. But for them, that's different. They can't do that.
Yeah.
So in Spain, it was where hardly any of them spoke English at the time. I had one of the players stood on my shoulder, and I'm trying to organise a defensive drill. And you say something and it doesn't happen, but this guy's just put the message across bluntly as I've said it, without the meaning. So that's you. So you have to, those things come in when you're trying to address, you know, actions. You're trying to sell your dream, but you have to be careful how you do it, you know, and the word you use.
Yeah.
I'm using pictures a lot more now because video obviously is a lot easier to use, and sometimes you can make the point that old saying, a picture paints a thousand words, is so true.
Yeah.
But you know, this has been a hard sell for me this last sort of 9 months, 10 months here, and we've overcome it now, and we're on the rise. I'm really pleased with how things have gone. But the first few months were hard because of that. We've done this before. We've always done it. You know, I don't think we're going to get any further. And they were happy with their little lot, and they didn't want anybody to upset the apple cart. In Canada, I met a lot of slum people because the coach before was a bit of an authoritarian, and he turned them all off, and they'd failed to get to the Olympics, and they were on the World Series, but dropping fast. Half the players had left and gone off to get jobs. The other half were going to give me a month, I think, and then we're going to leave. So I had to turn around, although we had the same language, because obviously English in Canada. We've already failed, and you know, if it's as bad as it was last time round, we're off quickly. Yeah. So I had to get a win early there there was that then, and before that was Samoa, where they had no squad. When I got there, there was no staff, no squad, and they got 30 guys from the villages on a pitch. And now there is a culture that there is. I don't need the Polynesian players are the kings in world rugby. Some big, huge, talented guys. And anybody looking from afar to the South Pacific, you're looking, you think, I'd love to go there because you could make something with those boys. What you don't factor in is how life is lived there and where culture is king.
Yeah.
And it's run on village and chieftains, and young players are seen but not heard. I mean, literally until you get to about 30, they don't speak. And if an adult speaks, they all keep their head down, and getting a two-way conversation is difficult. And a lot of, I suppose I have to qualify what I say here, but, you know, dads giving sons a good thrashing is an accepted thing there.
Yeah.
And they won't answer back, and they have that sort of hangdog, sullen look when you're talking to them. They don't want to. So I had to break all that down and try and mould a team. So, you know, those cultural things were hard to look. But the way I approach it is you can't do it on your own. You need a staff, and it's the same. So here in Germany, in Canada, in Samoa, you get people with you who are going to, who feel the same way you do, who will put the same message across, who sell that same dream and continue selling it. And they're the thing. You get those people to trust you, and the players will trust them. And, I think often, you know, Jurgen Klopp now in football, everybody's, you know, turned him into a god. But I, you know, knowing a couple of guys who know what goes on at Liverpool, how good he is with the people who work for him, and how he gets them to help. You know, Sir Alex Ferguson's success was based around two or three different head coaches who moulded his team for him. One of my friends works on the inside at Manchester United, and he said the difference between Solskjaer and Mourinho was that, you know, how Solskjaer almost dragged everybody together as much as he's new, but he understood how important it was to have everybody in it, from the dinner lady to the, you know, to the left winger. You need more than one person to build a culture. They have to be the figurehead that drives it and never allows the message to go. But those people are the keys. They're the ones who do it. And even going back, when I was at Leeds Rhinos, when I finally got promoted to be assistant coach in the senior team, we had a guy called Graham Murray, who came from Australia. If there's any Leeds Rhinos fans, they'll know him. What a fantastic guy. He changed my thoughts on so many things. He was a success wherever he went in the same. And the first time I saw someone do what I try to do now, he got everybody together. Before I'd even met him, I spoke to him on the phone a couple of times, and he said, "Can you send me the names of every player, every member of staff in the office, and all the coaches who work, but also the name of their wives or girlfriends, or you know, husbands, if you know the ladies in the office?" So I did. I sent it because I did, but I forgot to ask why. But I got it for him because it was easy. There was about 60 names on there. He got off the plane. We picked him up at Leeds Bradford Airport. He flew up from Heathrow. Brought him into the club. It was a wet January morning, really cold. Usual as you know in Leeds, cold, wet, miserable. Came in the office. Julie in the shop came up. "Hi, I'm Julie. Julie, how's Paul?" Oh, you could see his shoulders go straight back. He knows who I am. Yeah. Oh, he's fine, thanks. He memorised every name. Every name. And I know it's a bit of a circus trick, but he went round the office, and whoever he introduced to, he asked a personal question. "How's so-and-so?" "Oh, you've got three kids, haven't you? How are they?" Man, and I saw the change in people's body language. They you could see them all just coming up bigger, and he had them straight. He got them. They were with him. And he transformed the club in that. He brought a dysfunctional place together. And he did the same with the players. We did lots of social things. He had simple, silly rules, which like at lunch, you had to sit at the first spare place. So, the little clicks disappeared.
Yeah.
Everybody had to say please and thank you. And the players then ended up pushing those rules. He brought the players into the decision making more, which now is accepted as the way to go as a team. But he just made a difference off the field. But he got us as coaches, you know, as his acolytes or his henchmen, call us what you will. You know, we took the same message with us, and you know, it was amazing how that turned around, and it taught me a big lesson that you do a lot more winning off the field than you do on the field.
Yeah.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
So,
no, that is fascinating. Fascinating. And, you know, again, I've often thought the same about Solskjaer, actually. And, you know, he's had a lot of criticism over, you know, results and all that. But I always thought, but think, you know, probably people like me and you coaches who kind of know a bit more about what goes on, kind of look back and go, well, actually, you know, think about what he's doing behind the scenes, and then everything else might come.
Absolutely, you're sort of right. It's that 90 minutes on a Saturday, or you know, 80 minutes for us, whatever. That's just a tiny little drop. It's the tiny thing at the top of the pyramid. The rest of it, the work in progress, day in, day out.
Yeah.
You know, he keeps talking to Solskjaer, doesn't he? I mean, I'm a Man United fan, which it helps me, but so I'm interested about. He wants to make it the Man United way, or what he perceives to be the Man United way. And he's obviously working to get rid of people who aren't going to see.
Yeah.
Because in sport where money's involved, I think buying short-term success isn't as difficult as maybe people see, but achieving long-term success. So, you know, go back to how, you know, can you leave something in a better place than when you found it? That should be everybody's. And I think, you know, if Ollie goes on this way, maybe he will. Just like if Klopp left Liverpool tomorrow, he'd leave it in a fantastic place.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, going, I guess, back to culture, you know, one of the first things I can remember watching one of his interviews early on, I think it was about the FA Cup when he'd just come in and gone on that run. And, you know, they said, well, do you think you're going to win this year? And he said, well, you know, we're Man United. And I'd not heard that since Fergie. And I just thought, brilliant. That's that coming back in. And I just knew from that point, yeah, listen, probably going to struggle first 2 years, maybe. But he's going to change that and he's going to leave it, like you're saying, better place than he found it. And that, and that's what... Sorry, that's
he's sending, sending a message to his players there, isn't he? You know, we're not here to make up the numbers. You know, there's an accepted level here. I mean, you know, as I said to my players in training last night, we had a great session. I said, you know, that's the level. That's what we are. You know, this is German rugby. We can't drop from that.
Yeah, that's what we are. Yeah,
that's you have to push that message. I think that's part of that buy into what you're selling. You know.
Yeah. No, that's just fascinating. So, you know, I guess and probably leading on, and I know we've spoken a bit about buying, but, and I guess in some ways you've kind of already answered it, but I'll pose the question to you anyway. You know, why is it important for us as coaches to get that buy-in? You know, why is that such an important aspect of coaching in your opinion, in your experience?
Well, if you didn't, there'd be no point being there because, you know, you've been employed as the coach to improve the team and to help them reach their potential, whatever that potential may be. Not everybody can win everything. But if you can get them to see how they can use the skills and talents they have to achieve far more than they're achieving now, then that's buy-in.
Yeah.
You know, so in Canada, everybody was about 6'5" and 18 stone. There were some big, big men. And yet they were trying to play rugby sevens like Fiji or the real speedsters. We had big, powerful men. Mm. Why play a way that doesn't suit us? You know, one of the other things I always say that, you know, there's three types of coaches. There's the followers, there's the acceptors, and there's the innovators. The followers just follow the accepted. This is the way, the tactics that we play. There's the acceptors who accept that they're not as good as everybody else, so they'll try and copy what they do. But the innovators will try and play a way that suits their players, which I think every coach should do. My philosophy is about skill. You know, I've been pushing this mantra, when all is equal, skill is king, since I first began coaching. You know, when everybody's as big and as fast and as strong as each other, the thing that makes the difference is always the skill level. And it's that, and a skillful player is someone who can do the simple things consistently well. And you know, we used what we had in Canada to make the team better. You know, we used our power and you know, a little bit of skill to get success, and we had success. I've got no medals to show for my career, but what I have is when I left Canada, the players wrote me a reference, and it's my proudest possession. Which, you know, they wrote 2 pages of why any team should have me as coach, and it was, you know, saying they understood why you know, the basic skills are important and about having fun and is not just playing silly games. It's enjoying what you do to the best of your ability. And, well, lots of little things that I've always pushed, and you think people aren't taking notice of. So I've lost a thread. I go off on tangents when I get talking about coaching, but a coach's philosophy is one thing, but you know, you can't take the same approach to the game to every team you play, even in the same country. Go to a different, completely different country where the mindset's different. In Spain, when we were there, everybody was 5'8" and swivel hips, you know, like a good Barcelona midfielder. Mm. So you would never play the power game. To, you know, we, you'd adapt the game, make it more skillful. In Samoa, you know, they wouldn't play a structured, rigid game because that's not their approach online. Everybody had a sidestep, everybody had a kicking game, and everybody liked to run into the nearest man they could. You know, they loved the collision. But yet, so I had to find a way of playing that brought that out, you know, that we could play to our strengths and not minimise. Canada was playing to that, using that power game to our advantage. Here in Germany, they have that the German thing of being very efficient, you know, and efficient. But that efficiency is helping us play because we're very efficient in the way we approach the game. And once you sell them on that and you can show them how that can be achieved, get a quick win in training and just show them how doing this helps you do that. Yeah. That connection again, and suddenly you're off, you're running.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a really good point you make that, because, you know, something I've learned a lot on the Masters course this year, it's all about understanding your context. And, you know, again, I always go back to football because that's my sport. But what I see a lot of young coaches do is they sort of come in with this style of play or, you know, a certain idea in their head that they're going to implement without even realising where they're at. So, you know, I saw one the other day who's obviously a really ambitious young student coach walking into this amateur club. We, you know, fully grown men that have probably played long ball for the last 10 years or whatever, and he's trying to go in and do this Barcelona style of playing. It's not going to work though, is it? That's not their culture in a way. You know, their culture is playing a game, going to the pub after and having a couple of beers. Completely different to a professional, you know, aspect, which sounds similar to what potentially you were talking about just earlier with the rugby union situation.
It's back to that selling again. I think I heard someone say, and I wouldn't disagree, that to be a good coach, you have to really know your stuff, but then you have the gift of being able to put it across. And that gift takes a different... So I'll go back to where I started with the teachers I can remember from school, or my early coaches who had a huge impact on me. I couldn't tell you exactly what they did. I just know how they made me feel.
Yeah.
That's where I try to, you know, I value everybody. So even silly things and I've always done this, even in warm-ups, I mention everybody's name in some context. You know, well done, Sam, you know, your beer's looking a bit rough this morning. And you know, make them laugh on something or other. You know, I like the way... Just have so that everybody knows they're involved. Yeah. Because everybody loves to be valued, do they? I still do now, I'm sure you do. You want people to value what you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I was painfully shy as a boy, and those people now thinking back probably did that to me. They probably made me feel valued when I was struggling to, you know, to be part of things. And I just think it's not hard to be a people person. It takes effort, but it's not difficult to do.
Yeah.
And you just want to make sure everybody, even the best and the worst, you know, and that's the hard thing about being a coach. You have to be negative with people, but how you're negative is a skill in itself, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, definitely. Not everyone can do it. And yeah, you know, I mean, something I think is often lost within coaching is that aspect of, you're working with a person, not a player. Yeah. I see it all the time, you know, spending so much time on a technical or a tactical concept, but what are you doing to maybe develop their confidence or whatever, you know, as a person, not just in football or in rugby or whatever, like outside, when we talk about these life skills. And you know, I just think it's such a, you know, listening to you and share your experiences and your coaching, it is just, you know, fascinating. And every coach I seem to speak to, you know, such as yourself, got a lot of experience behind you, all seems to come to that same conclusion. It's all about developing people and, you know, getting them to buy in, and then all that other stuff will come after. So don't go in worrying about that. Look at developing your people.
I follow Twitter when I was away, to stay in touch at home, really. That's how I read it. Now I look, get the odd article. But I see so many gurus who post and how to be a better coach. And I always look at people's bios. I think, man, you haven't really got it, have you? Because it is down in the end to how you can make people feel. You can get people to do just about anything if you can make them understand why, you know, and make them feel good about themselves. We said about Solskjaer, you know, you see the 90 minutes on a Saturday, but it's what the work he's doing for the rest of the week. But when we finish a training session, those boys have to go home and they might dwell on something all night. You want to leave them with something positive. You know, I always try and get around the players at the end in the same way, not just to make sure, reassure people that, you know, you've had a bad one, but hey, if we don't make mistakes, we never learn. You know, all this, yeah, you know, really. Which is true. You know, you still sometimes you have to say it. You've got to encourage people to be, you know, the best they can be.
And yeah, definitely, definitely.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
So before we get on to our last segment for discussion in today's episode, just wanted to bring a quick word from our other sponsors today for this episode, Kiss Safety. So Kiss Safety have a fantastic track record in the world of safety. They know what it takes to make sure you've covered every angle when it comes to risk assessment and health and safety training. As the saying goes, the devil's in the detail. So when it comes to assessing your approach to controlling the hazards in your activities, be that work or sporting, KISS leave no stone unturned. KISS like to take a step back, gaining an overview of your health and safety problem, and design a simple and understandable solution that will ensure your people are kept safe and give you a peace of mind. And while the health and safety training is often a solution to reduce the probability of accidents, KISS are on hand to give you a solution in that area too. KISS Health and Safety Services, you're safer in our hands. For more information, check out KISS Safety's website, kisssafety.co.uk.
You know, and I think if we're just a bit conscious of time, so I think if we just move on to our, you know, last segment for discussion, if we like. So, you know, as coaches, and again, we've, you know, kind of briefly just discussed it there, but, you know, how do we go about implementing our culture or, you know, our coaching philosophy? How do we go about implementing that into a team, you know, our club, wherever we're at as coaches, you know, how would we go about that?
I don't think it should be at the forefront of your mind. I think culture is one of those, not supplementary, that's probably the wrong word, but it's something that goes hand in glove with everything you do, that you can build that with how you coach. So if you go into something and say, right, we're going to win the FA Cup next season, you've got to say how you're going to do it and why the way you want to approach it is going to be the one thing. So if you, when I first sat in front of these boys here in Germany, I said, hands up, who can catch and pass? Which is a bit like, you know, who can kick a ball in football? They all put their hands up. I said, no, you can't. I've watched you play, you can't. You know, it's that simple thing that everybody thinks they can do but can't do it properly. I said, we're going to make that better.
Yeah.
So we had the first training session and I recorded it and I cut some bits out and put it to circus music. You know, there were passes going over people's heads. I left the good ones out, but I said, look, you know, this is the sort of things we're doing. We're better than that. And then I found some old clips of where they won or scored it. I said, you know, that's German rugby. And, you know, I used a bit of the old Graham Murray sort of, it was a bit of a, you know, an old card trick type of thing, but, you know, this is what we could do.
Yeah.
This is what you've been doing.
Yeah.
And then if we do this, if you can hold the ball properly, there's a book, I've mentioned this on before, the Leeds and Hunslet School's Rugby League Coaching Book, 1947.
Wow.
It cost sixpence. And I got a copy off eBay. And it's got all the most up-to-date modern rugby coaching manual has exactly the same things in there in the same order. You can't reinvent the wheel. And I tell that to them, you know, if we do these really simple things well, you know, we can achieve unbelievable things. And the best players in our game do it, pass the ball just like you do. They offload just like you do. This sidestep, what is they do it at the right time and the right... And I use pictures a lot. If they do something well, I show that footage. And, you know, look, this is because we did this and that's how it connects. And if you... Even catching, you know, people think it's all about your hands, but it's not, it's about your feet. You know, your balance is important. Just like it is in cricket, go back to my brother. You know, if your head's over your front foot when you're doing a forward defensive, it's good. If you're passing and catching a ball, your head and your feet, where they are together, are so important. You can say that, but showing them when it's important and letting them see how success can be achieved if you do those little things.
Yeah.
I put it up on the wall in German, you know, the little things matter because what matters is the little things. And you sell, that's what I sell to them. You know, if we can master those little things, we will be successful.
Yeah, definitely.
So far, the improvement's been fantastic because they bought into it.
Yeah. And what, you know, what's fascinating again is what you've mentioned once or twice now that, you know, this is German rugby. You know, that's what we should be at. You know, yeah. We're Man United. That's your culture. You know, that's what we should be. That's what we can be. So how are we going to get you there? How are you going to get yourself there? That's fascinating. Really fascinating.
When I came, I had to overcome a waiver of hostility because the only pictures I could bring were from Canada and Samoa, my previous. I said, look, you know, look at where they started, look where they got to.
Yeah.
We don't want to bother. But I did it to quickly make the point and then transpose the German version as fast as I could. I said, look, remember when I showed you this one? Look at us doing this now.
Yeah.
You have to stick to it. You can't dip in and dip out. Once you start on a message in a certain way, you have to take it all.
That's the message, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, definitely, you know, it's just so fascinating. You know, I've just gone into a brand new women's team, amateur club in Leeds called Centralians. And, you know, I was going into it and I was a bit like, well, don't know what we're going to get, could get a complete mixed bag of players. And once we had the, you know, a set number of 15, 16, I sent out a Google Forms, you know, what's your reasons for joining? You know, what are your expectations of training? What are your expectations of coaching? You know, what do you want to achieve? And some of them it was, you know, want to have a bit of fun, more social aspect, others want to win a league. But the majority of them was, we want to develop as players. And so, you know, they turn up to this first session and there's a lot of laughing and joking, which, you know, could be expected first session. And me, I suppose, as a younger coach, I always get a bit, that's not what coaching should be, but let it happen. And then again, and then I get to the third session and I go, right, you know, so your responses have been, you want to develop as players, but you want to have fun. Well, the fun will come, a bit like you said, but we've got to, you've got to turn up wanting to develop. Otherwise, I can't help you. And then from there, every week now, they're turning up, they're ready to learn. And now we're looking to actually achieve something. And I guess that wider goal, which I've not put any focus on yet, you know, because again, a bit like you, I don't believe we should have a focus on winning the league, for example. And, you know, for me personally, so far, it seems to be working great. It's like we're slowly establishing a bit of a culture of what our expectations and what your expectations are and how we're going to get you there.
And you're right, the words develop. It takes time. It doesn't, you don't just go in and say, right, everybody's going to trust me today, aren't they? It doesn't work like that, does it?
Yeah.
You have to prove that you can be trusted.
Yeah.
One of the things I've learned as well over time is you can't be too nice. You have to have a hard edge at some point. And just use that. Graham Murray again, I go back to Graham. He used to write in his diary, he'd have one day in a month where he'd have an explosion on the training field just to keep everybody on their toes. And that always made me smile. But, you know, sometimes you've just got to remind them. And it's because it's human nature that people can start to fade and slack. Sometimes you've just got to let them know that that's not acceptable. But again, even that's important how you do it.
Yeah.
Those shouters and screamers and, you know, where swearing's the only outlet for their, and it's usually their frustration
at
how things are going, not the players, but it's about letting them know it's not acceptable.
Yeah, but here's why. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, you've got to, you know, if we're Man United, this is good enough for us. You know, that thing again we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're German, wherever.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, you mentioned there authoritative swearing out. That were me for years, you know, seeing someone muck about the kids or adults and having them through it and bollocking them. But then it's like, yeah, but it's a new team. I've just come in. I can't do that yet. And that's something that I've personally learned maybe over the last year, how to...
There's nowhere else to go though after that. You know, I found out as a young coach at Batley, that first ever job, we had success. But we won the first 8 games and lost a game and I went apoplectic.
Yeah,
but you've nowhere else to go then. Where you know they've seen the, you know, you just, and it's my frustration at us losing, not.
Yeah.
So you've got to be careful how you don't back yourself into a corner that you can't go any further.
The
discipline has to be, you make them think there's always another step. You'll never play again for this team. Well, once you've said it, you've said it. You've got to be careful. So even that has to be thought through. Being angry has to be considered.
Absolutely. Such a fantastic conversation. I almost don't want it to end, but I also want to be respectful to your time. But fascinating, Damien. Really fascinating insight. From your experience. I've learned so much today just sat here, just listening to you, which is great for me personally, but I'm sure that all the listeners will be as well. Really appreciate your time. So, how can anyone listening, how can they, follow you? Maybe, if they've got any questions, can they get in touch with you?
Well, of course you can. Yeah, you've got my email address, but I'm on Twitter as well. If they want to message me, or Facebook, I think I'm on as well. I'll respond to anybody. I'm always happy to.
Super stuff. I'll put that out when the episode comes out. Yeah. So yeah, Damien, just leaves me to say thank you again so much for your time.
It's one of my favorite
episodes so far. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Great stuff.
No, I'll just pause that. Yeah. No, that was.